Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we're about to have a conversation with Dr. Freeman Hrabowski, of course, president of the University of Maryland Baltimore County, UMBC, since 1992. He was named one of Time Magazine's most 100 most influential people on the planet. It's just a point about President Barack Obama as chair of the newly created President's Advisory Commission on the Educational Excellence of African Americans. And as a disclaimer, we lived across the alley from each other for about 9 years. So, so Freeman, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
I appreciate you taking this brief time during your vacation to talk to us.
Sure.
And the number here, by the way, is 410-319-8888. So this is... I can say no other person I can think of should head this commission. I can see why the president appointed you. But talk a bit about what this commission is and, I mean, the role you think it's going to play.
Sure. I mean, many people don't know that the former President Bush had appointed a similar commission for Hispanic children and academic excellence some years ago, and that's headed by College President Eduardo Pardon. President Obama decided to appoint this committee because there is the same kind of need for a national commission that focuses on academic excellence of African Americans. And there is an achievement gap in our country that few people fully understand. And the basic point is that many children are not reading or computing at the level we would expect. A number of children are not graduating from high school, and many are not ready for college. And so the purpose of the commission is to look at academic excellence and what it means in America, and to look at the status of African-American children with the goal of increasing the numbers of children who are performing at the highest possible levels and of, quite frankly, improving performance overall.
Well, this has been a part of your work for a long time. I mean, just very specifically, the academic excellence among African-American children. You've been at the forefront. You sometimes were like almost a lone wolf howling in the wind for a while, saying we have no excuses, we've got to make things work, and talked about how to do them and kind of turned that around in UMBC. But so I'm curious, you take that, all that work you've done over the last 30 years or so, how does that translate into this? I mean, what are you going to focus on? What are you going to begin to try to unearth to make a conversation a little louder than it's been?
Let me start by saying I think we need to focus on the academic achievement of American children in general. Let's start there.
Right.
That we don't have enough Americans of any race performing at the highest possible levels when looking at international competition. And you see that from the math and science competition across the globe. And increasing numbers of our children of color, particularly Hispanic and African Americans. And if we are to see the country doing as well as it needs to do in terms of economics, in terms of being competitive, we've got to make sure all types of children are succeeding at the highest possible levels. And I am hopeful that we can look at the funds we're spending right now and the different programs we have across the country through different federal agencies and look very carefully at how to make best use of what's already being spent and to look at ways of building synergy among different institutions at the federal level, state and local, looking at what school systems are doing, what universities are doing. And quite frankly, anytime you talk about solving a problem, you have to focus on that problem with specificity, with a goal of managing the project, of executing, of coming up with strategies. And quite frankly, I am hoping that the commission will agree that we want America to look at itself. Meaning all of us, whether we're talking about our families, our communities, our institutions, I think we can all do far more than we're doing right now to help our children of all types.
So, but I'm curious as you reflect on what you've done at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, mm-hmm. and where African-American students have achieved as highly as white American, Asian American students in science and mathematics and engineering, mm-hmm. which you've been pushing. So I'm curious from that experience, and of course you're starting with a crop of kids who clearly wanted to be there or they wouldn't have applied to come to UMBC.
Right.
So
right.
They're already a leg up.
Right.
But go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, first of all, it's really important to say that my students, African Americans and others, are succeeding in science and engineering. It's true, but they're really doing well in the arts, humanities, and social sciences. I've got more students going to law school and going on to get degrees in ancient studies and in the classics. It's amazing. And the number of artists, when you look at the artistic community in this region, you'll see a lot of UMBC students who are of all races, African-Americans, whites, Asians, Hispanics. And the point is that we have worked at UMBC to promote academic excellence across disciplines, across races for men and women. And we've become that model of inclusive excellence. Now, it is unusual to see African Americans and minority students excelling in science and engineering at any institution, but to see them excelling and competing against people from across the world really has gotten the attention of this country. And so we like talking about inclusive excellence across disciplines, across races. And one of the things we have to teach black students to do and white students to do and Asian and Hispanics is how to work together, how to work in groups, how to be effective in that work, and how to prepare educators who can work with children from different racial and ethnic backgrounds in such a way that they've got that sensitivity that they can do two things. One, expect the most, and number two, really care deeply about those young people, because that's the secret of the UMBC story. It is a place that has very high standards, as high as you can find in the world across disciplines, and the place where you've got faculty and staff who care deeply about young people and expect the most from them from all races.
So one of the most difficult things I think that you wrestle with, not you particularly, but mm-hmm. you in general wrestle with in this is, I mean, how you translate that understanding.
Yes.
From policy conversation into reality mm-hmm. in our mostly public school system where most of our kids are.
Well, you know, there are several things to be said. I mean, we're working with a number of children from Baltimore City schools and other surrounding school systems, and make no mistake about it, when we can have connections with young people and work to help them to learn to read and think well and to want to be smart and to teach them those values that are most important, respecting authority and being on time and getting the work done and showing how smart students are students who work hard. It is amazing what can be accomplished. And we need to show children from all backgrounds just how hard other kids work. And that's a part of the answer. As we have kids on our campus from Baltimore City, from the counties around, and when they see how hard my students are working, they go, wow, you know, because they're not accustomed to seeing that. And children in general need to see what it takes to succeed. I mean, that's a part of the answer. But there are other parts. There are policies that work against children. For example, we know that too many children of color, particularly boys, are suspended regularly, are not in school because of suspensions. We need to look at those policies, because if the child is not in school, the child doesn't see that as punishment. What child is going to consider being out of school punishment, quite frankly? You know, and when the child is out of school, the child is getting behind. And when the boy comes back to school, obviously he's behind and he's going to be embarrassed, and that causes problems. So we need to look at those policies across the country that lead to children not being in school. So we need to help families understand how important it is to have those children in school every day, and to understand what it means to work with that teacher, respect that teacher, and work with that teacher in helping that child.
I'm going to interrupt for a moment, Freeman, because we have to take a very brief break. Dr. Hrabowski is going to stay with us through the first 15 minutes of the next hour before we look at mental health parity. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going to turn to WEA traffic in just a minute and come right back with Dr. Freeman Hrabowski. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Reminding you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. More information at www.mecu.com. We continue our conversation with UMBC President Dr. Freeman Hrabowski, who was just named by President Barack Obama as chair of the Advisory Commission on Excellence, Educational Excellence for African Americans, 410-319-8888. So, and what you were saying as we went to break, Freeman, about the numbers of kids suspended, that is real. I mean, it seems to me that that two things. I mean, A, there's a lot of explaining to do in the large United States of America who don't really understand what the gap is about.
Right.
And even within the black community,
right,
debating over why this gap is there and what can do to ameliorate it.
Yeah, exactly. Usually we talk about a four-year gap between middle-class white children in the 12th grade and black and Hispanic children who reach the 12th grade. That literally, that 12th grade black child is reading at about the level of the average middle-class white child in the 8th grade. And that's reading and math skills. So we really are talking about fundamental skills in reading and mathematics. That's the first point. The second point is that I'm comparing people in the 12th grade. Large numbers of children of color don't make it to the 12th grade, particularly in urban areas and some other communities, and therefore are not finishing high school. And so we've got two issues. One, how to help children complete high school, ready to get some kind of post-secondary education. And number two, to make sure they make it to the 12th grade. And so it's both types of issues are critical because it's impossible to get a good job if you don't have a good education.
What do you so in part of the argument you're going to have from different sides? Let me take them and see how you might address this on this commission once it's been named. But by the way, are you part of naming this commission, or will it be named by the White House?
The commission will be named by the White House. I'm working with them, but they have the responsibility for that. I'm chair of the commission, but they will, and this will take the next few months. We probably will not have the first meeting of the commission until after January, because it takes a number of months to identify people for the White House and the Department of Education, I should say, will be making those decisions, and the people have to be vetted through a fairly extensive process. So it'll be into the next year when we get engaged in the work as a complete commission.
So a couple of issues that come up constantly. I'm talking about how that you would and how we should think about responding to it. There are many people who would argue and say with you that, look, racism and poverty are the issue. And until you address the issues of poverty in African-American world of America, we're never going to see educational excellence or black children be on parity with other children in America.
And my first response is that I can take you to communities in this country where children are poor, black and white, and where they are doing well. There are practices that can help considerably, and that involves everything from getting support from families and supporting those families to having teachers who know how to work effectively with those children to making sure that the entire community surrounds those kids like a village, quite frankly. So there are examples of that. And we can do that. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be doing everything we can to help people move out of poverty. Of course we should. Because we're not talking about blaming anybody here in terms of the victim. We're talking about helping people not to feel like victims. We're talking about ways of empowering children and families to help them get what they need. People need jobs. There's no doubt about that. We have to find ways of helping people to get the training they need so they can have jobs so they can take care of their children. But it's not one thing or the other. It's a combination of practices and strategies that we have to use, including job training for families and giving them support, to finding ways of helping families know what they can do to help teachers, to giving those teachers the respect that they need as they work to help children out, to helping the schools not only with funding, but with other ways of making sure we are doing what we need to do with policies that will lead to children succeeding. And that's why I'm saying we have to think about how to make sure children are in school and all the factors that lead to children either being in school or not. Because obviously, if the kid is not in school, he can't be learning. He's not learning, and he's getting behind.
So, I mean, how do you address what some people would consider one of the bottom line issues, and maybe it's not, I want to hear your perspective on this, that of the growing social isolation of poor children in inner cities especially and in some of our rural areas. I mean, I'm talking about isolation from the mainstream of America, isolation from the notion of success.
Right, right. And there's no doubt that that is a challenge, that years ago you had more of a combination of people from different economic backgrounds in the same community, and a part of the answer has to be giving children a chance to see the possibilities. That's why I'm always pushing other colleges, and I know that a lot of our colleges in our area do it, to get kids on campus, to get them involved with college students, to let them see what's possible. I mean, it's very important to give children the chance to see what's possible and to see and hear the stories of people who look like themselves. I mean, it's critical. And so you're absolutely right. Can't just lead people by themselves. We've got to give people a chance to see what's possible.
And what do you say to some of the critics who might raise issues that, look, race isn't the issue here. It has nothing to do with race. It has nothing to do with the history of America. It has to do with families. It has to do with people's own inability to solve their social situation. And there's a huge body of thought in America that says we've spent enough.
We can't be simplistic. We have all these factors that have to be taken into account. Families are important. My colleagues and I wrote two books about what parents need to do to help their children. We want to empower people to do all they can, but at the same time, there's no doubt that race is still a factor in America. All you need to do is look at the disproportionately large number of children from particular groups who are not doing well. At the same time, remember, the majority of poor children in this country are white. And those children have issues also that have to be addressed. So poverty is a factor. Race is a factor. Helping people understand what they can do regardless of their circumstances to help their children is also a factor. So it's not one thing or the other. It's a combination of factors. This is why I said at the beginning, Mark, we all have to look in the mirror. Every parent has a certain responsibility. Every educator has a certain responsibility. Every public official. And I'm saying that we in America can do more than we're doing now. All of us can do far more than we're doing right now. And quite frankly, as we say to our students on my campus, you can do more. We expect a great deal from our students. We care deeply about them, but they will tell you we expect them to work very hard. And similarly, as we're working with children, we do the same thing. I mean, any time an adult shows that he cares about a child, that child will respond favorably. And the more we can show that we care and show the child what's expected and help the child to want to be smart. If you ask me one thing, I want our children, black children and America's children, to want to be smart, to want to learn and to study and to work hard. We have to have that as a value in our society. American Idol should be about kids wanting to be smart, not about kids entertaining or about sports. It should be about wanting to be smart. I love the idea of scholar athletes. I mean, I like the fact that my athletes are working hard on our campus. You know, it's important to focus on the academic side as we focus on anything else.
That's one of the reasons that at UMBC you never instituted football.
It costs too much money. But you come and talk to my basketball players, lacrosse players, soccer players, swimmers. They are serious students. They're planning to be lawyers and doctors and artists. I mean, yes, they are enjoying the athletics, but they come to college to become educated. This is what I want people to be saying. I mean, we don't say it enough in our country in general. We have to focus on the academic preparation of children.
So when you think about the politics of education in America, and it's a very complex politics we fight in this country on education.
Yes.
And where we have to go. I mean, there are so many components of this that are kind of working against it. You just talked about making a play on words in terms of what people watch on television. But this whole world we have of reality television, of being the media that we're sucked into, when you have your Meyerhoff scholars and they come in, you make them turn off their Facebook and turn off their cell phones, right?
but, you know, let me tell you what gives me hope. I mean, I think, first of all, it's so important for Americans to believe in ourselves, that we can go to the next level. And we may say, oh, things are so bad. Let me tell you when things were bad. When I was going to the ninth grade 50 years ago, I was using hand-me-down books in Birmingham, and I was being told over and over again in many ways by the larger society that I was a second-class kid, that I wasn't as smart as white kids. It was only after that civil rights movement that we moved to the next level. And at that time, for children in general, think about it, only 10% of Americans had a college education in the mid-60s. We're up now to 30%, and at the time when I'm talking about when I started the ninth grade, only 2% of blacks had a college education. Well, now it's 20% of blacks, and it's 30% of Americans in general, about 15% of Hispanics. But we've come a long way from a very difficult time. When people say things are much worse than they used to be, no. For those of us who were around in the 50s, you know, things were tough. They were bad. We were being told it wasn't going to get any better. And so what has happened, what makes this country great, is we have come a long way since the 50s and 60s. And those people who've been able to get an education of all races are doing far better than they ever could have imagined. Our challenge now is to help poor children of all races to aspire to get that education so they can move into the middle class. I mean, that has to be our dream. I mean, and it has to be what we have as our fundamental goal in this country. We are where we are as a nation in a good way because of education. It made all the difference in the world. And it will take that kind of optimism and focus to take children, African-American, Hispanic, white, Asian, Native American children of all types to the next level. It has to be our salvation because other countries get that. You know, you think about it. India is creating 1,000 additional universities to educate, to double the number of college-educated people. I mean, so that we have no choice but to focus more and more of our attention on the education of all of our children. It's very important.
We've been talking with Dr. Freeman Hrabowski, of course, president of UMBC, just been named as chair of the President Obama's Advisory Commission on Educational Excellence for African Americans. He'll be returning into our show September 17th for a full hour's discussion with all of us about education and work in the society. And Freeman Hrabowski, thanks so much for joining us, and please enjoy the rest of your vacation.
Thank you, Mark, very much. Take care.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. We're going to take a brief break, a very brief break, and come right back and jump into the issue of mental health parity, which affects all of us here. Stay with us. Don't go away.